Therefore, it does not matter whether one is very smart or very stupid. In this practice, there is no distinction between those of sharp and dull faculties. Single-minded exertion is itself pursuit of the way. Practice and realization are by nature undefiled. Advancement to enlightenment is just an everyday affair. In our world and the other quarters, from the western heaven to the eastern earth, all equally maintain the Buddha seal, while each enjoys a particular style of teaching. As you are, therefore, devote yourself exclusively to your practice of Zazen. There are 10,000 distinctions and 1,000 differences, but your fundamental concern is to study Zen and pursue the way. The world is completely at rest. That is its most basic nature. This basic world is before has or has not. It is prior to like or dislike. It's before honor or shame. And you, when completely at rest, can experience it. You can know it as it is. Whether bright or clever, a fragrant rose permeates the air, and the fog from the great ocean imbues the surrounding firs and cedars. We cannot escape this fact, even if we try. It is actually our birthright. We have already been dunked in it and are infused with the world's radiance, and we are infused with its great light. In fact, if there is an impediment in touching this world at rest, if there is an impediment in knowing this world of sights and smells and tastes and sounds, each one calling to us to wake up, the impediment might be in we being too bright, or too smart, or too clever. We can be so clever and so witty and miss what is right here before our very eyes. Rebecca reminded us last night that the word seshin has 3 concordant implications: to touch the mind, to receive the mind, and to manifest that very mind. The only way we can do this is by dropping our thoughts, our preoccupations, our baggage, Roshi said, and come back to this breath, come back to this sound, come back to this mu. In this way, we are in keeping with the deepest reality, allowing it to inform us, allowing it to confirm us. Let the sounds give you a name. Let the wind and the rain, the waves and the sand, let the gray mist and clouds interpret you. Let them tell you. Let them dream you. All that you need to be a mature practitioner is a single-minded desire, bodhicitta, the desire to know yourself as you are, before gender, before age, before culture, status, or education. Buddhahood is simply the ongoing commitment to returning to this place now, to this body here. Each thing, sentient and insentient, each person, you, occupies its own unique Dharma position. That is a fact. And all of you together express and come forth as me. I and everyone else and everything else come forth and express ourselves as you. All each one of us need do is stand upright into our bodies, stand up into our own hearts, and have confidence that, yes, just as I am before anything else. And this before anything else cannot be defiled. And the practice of before anything else and the realization of it can never be tainted or stained. It is before stain and taint, but yet includes tainting and staining. And so we have misconduct, and so we have abuse, and so we have harm. This is the Buddha as human. Or this is the Buddha as human side of before anything else. And so we continue practicing endlessly. And so we vow to save all beings. And we bow and put on the rakusu, which means we are putting on the precepts, our code of ethics. These vows and precepts are not an afterthought to ensure correct conduct, since before anything else includes problems. The vows and precepts are direct expressions of the enlightened mind, of the realization experience itself. This is how Buddhas are able to be humans, and by practicing, which is cultivating our own Buddhahood, our own realization, we become what we already are, Buddhas. Now, this next line of Dogen's is interesting. In many of his writings, he puts meaning encased in meaning. There is the more surface interpretation. Practice is a step-by-step method. But when you look closely, under that is practice as nothing other than realization itself and the practice of that realization. He writes, advancement to enlightenment is just an everyday affair. That's Bielefeld's translation. Advancement to enlightenment is just an everyday affair. Abbe translates it this way. Going forward is a matter of everydayness. And Ta-Nehisi says it this way. Practice realization is a matter for every day. A monk said to Zhao Zhou, I have just entered the monastery. Please teach me. Zhao Zhou said, have you eaten your rice? The monk said, yes, I have. Zhao Zhou said, wash your bowls. So on the surface, this koan echoes Dogen. Zhao Zhou is teaching about the everydayness of practice, of making your bed when you get up in the morning, of turning off the lights and turning down the heat when you leave the room or when you leave the house. And he is teaching about washing your dishes and cups after breakfast and after lunch. But he is also like Dogen, making another point. When Zhao Zhou inquires, "Have you eaten your rice?" he is also asking, "Have you tasted the plain but delicious food of our ancestors? Have you eaten the most ordinary of foods?" And the monk says, "Yes, I have." And Zhao Zhou says, "Wash your bowls." In this new context, Zhao Zhou is not only talking about kitchen duties, and that is also true of Dogen. He is saying there is nothing special here. You need to go forward and practice every day true and a good teaching. But we would not be reading Dogen today if this were his only pointer. There is also the teaching of the plain but delicious ancestor food. Have you eaten that yet? And if so, what will you do right now? With this line, there is an allusion to Nansen's ordinary mind as the Tao, translated by some as everyday mind is the way. And again, the same double meaning is evident. We hear often the teaching that just realize things as they are. But at the very same moment, we have to realize things as they are not, and put those together, and then step forward from that place. But whatever meaning there is, the underlying principle is to practice Zazen with diligence and steadfastness. Sometimes Dogen exhorts us to be urgent in our attitude, and at other times steadfast. These may be simply two constitutional types, like rabbits and turtles, one quick and tending towards brief, concentrated flurries, and the other moving more slowly, tolerant and steady. However, it matters little which style or which constitution you are. No matter what you do, as long as you endure and are at some point willing to let go, if only for a moment, of each and everything. To let go of each and everything that you think you are. Letting go of anything that you feel you may be. And what will remain is what and who you are. What will remain are your own unique talents, your own genius. Now, energy doesn't have to be wasted and spent in maintaining mental formations as defenses, in maintaining a complex or constellations to defend a self that has no real substance. Now, without any defenses, you can respond appropriately, moving freely, both when still or in motion. You've now touched and taken your own birthright, your own treasure, which is the treasure of all beings, by giving up the self, by forgetting the self for even a moment, the 10,000 things, the seagull scream, the spring clouds, the hawks diving, give confirmation to what you are and to what you are not. Things will come up to distract you from this confirmation. Important things. Thousands of important ideas and fantasies. Thousands of hopes and feelings. Tens of thousands of different conditions. Some quite beautiful and alluring and seductive. Others dreadful, ugly, and equally seductive. But all we need do, what we have to do, is turn back to our breath, turn back to Mu, turn back to the waves splashing on the sanded beach. During Sesshin, that is your only true concern. That is the fundamental concern. This is not a turning back to the self, but a seeing through the construct called self. And this turning back is the practice of true Zazen, and it is the practice of ease and joy. Now, Bielefeld ends the third part of his translation right there about this fundamental concern, but Abe and Ta-Nehisi add two more lines. They add, why abandon the seat in your own home to wander in vain through the dusty regions of another land? If you make one false step, you miss what is right before you. This is an allusion to the story of the lost son in the Lotus Sutra. And this story has similar overtones to the beginning part of Jesus' prodigal son parable. But we needn't worry about illusions here. All we need to know is at home is where the hearth is. Home is the central place, and it is always warm and always inviting. The hearth is where everyone gathers, where everyone and everything is allowed. This is the place of rest and joy and ease. And if that is not where you think you are right now, that's okay. Just keep putting one foot forward. Let Mu do Mu. Let the sound of waves utterly and completely fill you. Drop fully into what arises next. For each thing comes forth with the radiance of the Buddha's face. And with one true step, you see it. Look. Look. And with one true step, you hear it. Listen, listen. I'd like to end with a short poem by Tung Shan. It goes like this. For whom do you bathe and make yourself presentable? The voice of the cuckoo urges you to come home. Hundreds of flowers fall Yet the voice is not stilled. Ever deep in jumbled peaks, it is calling clearly. With one true step, you see it. Look. With one true step, you hear it. Listen.